Good day and welcome to today's Part 2 application of OBQI Principles and the Improvement Matrix for Plan of Action Development. This call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Sarah Butterfield. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Susan. Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to thank you again for joining our iPro Home Health Project team this afternoon. We're going to do Part 2 of our two-part informational sessions that we structured to provide a review of the acute care hospitalization improvement matrix and then discuss application of the plan of action development related to that acute care hospitalization quality measure. Those of you that registered for today's call were forwarded via email a copy of the slides that we're going to reference during today's presentation along with a program and evaluation form. And I know a few of you have called just prior to what's going on saying that you had difficulty or did not receive the slides. So I'm going to give you our website address. If you do not have the slides in hand, you can go there now and download the slides. That address is http://index/events/id.279. That'll bring you to where you can actually download the slide. And we also emailed to you a sample acute care hospitalization plan of action. That's also posted there, and that you can use as reference after we get done with today's call. We've, again, received a very excellent response from you all interested in participating in the call. We were able to secure a total of 100 WebEx lines. So if you've tried to log into the WebEx session and you were not able to access it or get in, all of the available WebEx lines may be taken. That's why we provided you the PowerPoint slides so that you can also listen in via the conference call format. So we also received feedback from evaluations from the first session that some of the agencies listening just via the phone, via teleconference, thought it would be helpful for us to review the slide number that we're referencing during the presentation. So we're going to make every attempt to try to do that so you can keep up with the presentation and know what slide we're on. As a reminder, the conference call session is being taped, and it's going to be posted to the home health section of our website, making it available to you for future review. And the October 20th, last Thursday's call, is currently posted to our website. When you go to the home health homepage, you can see located under past events, and you can access the audio as well as the slides for last week's presentation. Now, this session today, we're going to begin with review of some of the tools we incorporated into the acute care hospitalization planning packet that we forwarded to you. We reviewed that in a little bit of detail last week. And then we're going to move on to a more detailed review of the acute care hospitalization improvement matrix. And Chris Stiegel, my colleague on the home health project team, is going to review that with you. Following the presentations, we'll open up the lines for your questions and comments and then further discussion. So let's move on to slide number 2. I'd like to review our objectives for the presentation as outlined on slide number 2. We're going to review the areas for improvement that are incorporated into the acute care hospitalization improvement matrix. And just as a reminder, you did receive a hard copy of that improvement matrix in your acute care hospitalization planning packet. And you have also an electronic version on the CD-ROM that was incorporated in that ACH planning packet also. Then we're going to look at it, identifying evidence-based strategies to reduce avoidable hospitalizations. And then we're going to describe on how to incorporate evidence-based strategies and corresponding actions into the OBQI process for plan of action development. And we're going to be covering this in more detail than we did on last week's call. So this week's call will actually build on the information provided on last week's call. So on slide number 3, let's look at the challenges ahead of us. In those of you that were on part 1 of this series last week, we reviewed some of the data that drove CMS's decision to select the acute care hospitalization quality measure for national focus. Currently in the ACE scope of work, that is a national focus, and the ACE scope of work started August 1st, and that will run till July 2008. We reviewed that the issue of acute care hospitalization really crosses over provider settings. It's not just a home health issue. It actually includes the whole continuum of care for patients. And there is evidence through the National and the New York OBQI demonstration projects that started back in 1996 and ran to 2000 that acute care hospitalization can be reduced. Agencies in the National and New York OBQI demonstration were able to attain hospitalization rates in the low to mid 20% range. Our range currently statewide for New York is at 31%. And also the challenge being that there is a performance gap between science and actual practice, and we're hoping that the improvement matrix that contains the evidence-based strategies really does provide more detail for you, more evidence-based strategies. So our mission is to implement care delivery systems that prevent deterioration, result in a need for hospitalization and emergent care, and working towards our goal, again, to reduce avoidable hospitalizations and emergent care for home health patients. Slide number 5 addresses some of the possible solutions that we're driving towards. We discussed last time that acute care hospitalization is not just an issue involving home health providers, but CMS has really provided us with a unique opportunity to collaborate together within the home health industry, both here statewide and on a national level, to begin to address the issues that are very common to all of you and to lead the charge and influence improvements across the provider settings. The acute care hospitalization improvement matrix will provide evidence-based strategies to focus on areas for improvement that address coordination of care transitions, identification of patients at risk when the patient is admitted to home care. And these strategies also map to actions that look at stabilizing and managing complex chronic conditions, support of patient and caregiver self-management, improving communication and collaboration with physicians, and also creating systems using using health information technology. And for home health, this would be telehealth, to support these practices. Our plan is addressed on slide number 6. We're going to look at using the OBQI process to systematically identify problems that drive acute care hospitalization rates. Really, the purpose of these calls and the upcoming workshops in November is to help you utilize the OBQI process and the improvement matrix to develop a plan of action to target acute care hospitalization for your agencies. We're going to look at using strategies and actions identified in the change binder, that's your improvement matrix, to help build your plan of action. And then engage in quality improvement community to share our lessons learned, both with home health agencies and other providers, both, again, on a statewide level and nationally. And we'll be doing some of this sharing at those workshops in November as we work as a group to develop plans of action for each agency. And then lastly, we're going to continuously strive to improve quality, which we know you are also committed to for both your patients and the staff that are working within your agencies. Our goal, we're going to try and make this process as simple as possible for you. We know that you have many other things that you're involved in, and we want to support you to the extent that you need to strive in achieving the CMS goal of a statewide acute care hospitalization rate of 23%. As I mentioned before, we're currently at 31%, so we're going to try and strive to get as close to that 23% range as we can. Okay, let's look at some of the resources to assess the acute care hospitalization issues. And these resources are ones that we provided to you in that acute care hospitalization planning packet, some of which that we reviewed with you last week. This week we're going to focus on a couple of the tools that will help support your process of care investigation. And we had received feedback from last week's call from some of you saying that you'd actually like to see the steps of how an actual process of care investigation would take place. So we're going to provide you with those examples. The acute care hospitalization planning packet, the goal of that, again, was to provide you with all of the necessary tools to conduct a process of care investigation, which is really just reviewing your patient medical records. And that, in turn, will help you determine what problems may be driving your acute care hospitalization rates for your agency. The workshops that we're going to offer in November are designed for you to bring your process of care investigation results to the workshop, and we'll help map them to some strategies in the improvement matrix and help you finalize your plan of action. Now, within that acute care hospitalization packet, we included your agency risk-adjusted outcome report. And again, on that report, the acute care hospitalization outcome measure, your rate, agency rate, is listed on page 3 with the other two utilization measures. You also received a hard copy of your agency case mix report. You received a hard copy and an electronic version of your case mix analysis tool for your agency, and I'm going to review that in more detail, and your patient tally workbook, and we'll review that in more detail on this call also. An acute care hospitalization chart record tool was also included, and that we're going to see how we apply that to your process of care investigation. Now, I want to remind you that your agency case mix analysis report and your patient tally workbook are loaded onto the CD-ROM that's in your acute care hospitalization planning packet. And because they contain patient-level data, they are password protected. And those passwords were forwarded to your agency under separate cover well in advance of you receiving the acute care hospitalization packet, went to the liaison for your agency. If you do not have your password, please just give one of us a call. The last slide in the presentation today contains our contact information. We can easily provide you with that password for you to be able to get into your reports. Okay, let's first look at the case mix analysis tool. And the purpose of this tool, it's an Excel-based application, and it allows agencies to better understand the characteristics of their hospitalized patients. The case mix analysis tool takes information from your OBQI case mix tally report and your patient outcome tally report and combines it together to really look at case mix values. As outlined on slide number 9, the case mix analysis tool computes case mix values for your hospitalized and your non-hospitalized episodes. And just as a reminder, for the acute care hospitalization measure, we're looking at care episodes. Patient needs to have a start of care, resumption of care, and for the acute care hospitalization measure, the endpoint to care is either transfer to acute care, hospitalization, or discharge from the agency. The case mix tool also calculates differences in case mix value between the hospitalized and non-hospitalized episodes. It produces a report, which you have a hard copy of, that shows you the differences in case mix values between the two groups, the home health episodes that ended with a hospitalization versus those that did not. And it's important, again, to note that this is really created by combining your case mix and outcome reports together, so it is specific to your patient population for your agency, and you'll find the report period indicated on the front page of that hard copy that we forwarded to you. Case mix analysis report extends the review of the case mix report to examine case mix differences between your patients. And it really can help you focus your process of care investigation to identify true causes for your acute care hospitalization rate. It's a very important tool to use for the process of care investigation. We had some agencies that were involved in the acute care hospitalization pilot project that reported that before looking at the report, they felt for certain they knew which patients were driving their acute care hospitalization rates. They were actually surprised when they looked at the case mix analysis report that those patients were, in fact, really not the ones that were driving their acute care hospitalization rates. It really helped them to focus their problem areas to design their plan of action around. Okay, we're looking at slide 11, and this provides a sample of what the case mix differences report looks like. Notice that the case mix measures on the left-hand side, which is column number 2, these are the items that you see on your case mix OBQI reports, and this is taken right out of your raw OASIS data. The averages or the percentages for the hospitalized patients are shown in column 2, and the averages and percentages for non-hospitalized patients are shown in column number 4. The fifth column shows the differences in the case mix measures between the hospitalized and non-hospitalized patients. And when you notice a positive difference in that fifth column, then the case mix value is higher among your hospitalized patients. And then adversely, if the value is negative, then the case mix value is higher among your non-hospitalized patients. Also notice that one of the case mix variables are shaded on the example here, the NE Medicaid case mix measure. The case mix measures that have this background shading are those that are associated with risk factors for hospitalization that have been reported in the scientific literature. These may or may not be related to your patient population, your particular patient population, but it's highlighted there just sort of as a reference so you could see what the national data looks like. Okay, on slide 12, we're going to continue looking at some patient characteristics that are included into the case mix analysis report. You can actually see how the data is reflected for these categories. Again, you have the hospitalized and the non-hospitalized categories. Your agency mix of patients with these characteristics may require greater attention if similarities are found between the two. You'll note on that case mix analysis report that some case mix values are reported as percentages. And as you move through the report towards the end, some are reported as averages instead of percentages. The values that are measured by presence or absence have a percent sign, like female, gender, Medicaid as a payment source. And the values that do not have a percent sign are obviously the averages, such as age, because many are from the OASIS items that are measured using a scale. For instance, bathing is measured on a scale from 0 to 5. So we wanted to make sure you understood that some were percentages and why some were averages. So if we look at slide 13, this agency's hospitalized patients are more heavily weighted for dependence in living skills, personal care, and medication administration. And in follow-up to last week, there was a very excellent question that was asked about why the percentages did not add up across the rows to 100%. And they are mutually exclusive. They are not supposed to add up to 100%. And this is because they're calculated from within each group separately, each group meaning your hospitalized patients versus your non-hospitalized patients from your tally reports. And then additionally, the question arises sometimes is why doesn't do the columns not add up to 100%? And that's because many of the case mix values are based on OASIS items. And some of those OASIS items have multiple items that can be marked, like assisting persons, MU 350, and some of the groups of case mix values, such as those, will likely be greater than 100%. Furthermore, they're not always case mix values for all of the available choices for a particular OASIS item. For instance, residents based on MU 300. And the sum for groups of case mix values such as these are likely to be less than 100%. So that provides you with an overview of your agency case mix report. And if you need any assistance walking through or having a better understanding, we'll be happy to do that with you if you give us a call. Okay, we're going to move on to the patient tally report workbook. We're going to look at the structure of it and what value it has to your plan of action development. And as a reminder, this again is on that CD-ROM password protected that we sent to your agency. Slide 15 provides you with a screenshot of the CMS Tally Report Workbook tool. This is the screenshot that you see when you open the tool. Some of you have used this tool, I know, over the last 3 years for the OBQI. Sometimes if you've used it once, it's hard to remember what the name of the tool is. And I know some of you have not utilized this tool in the past, but we're going to try and address the value of using it. Again, this is password protected, and when you open the tool, it's going to prompt you to enter the password that we forwarded to you under a separate cover. If you encounter any difficulty opening the tool, because this has occurred over the past week, we've received some calls, it may just be because your Excel security level is set on high, and that's a pretty easy fix. To correct it, just on the Excel toolbar at the top of your computer, click on the Tools selection. You'll see a choice for Macros. And when you click on Macros, you'll see a drop-down menu with a choice of Security. And if you click on security, you'll probably note that what it's set at is high, which is why it won't let you open the tool. You can go ahead and set that at medium, and then open the tool again and click the enable macros, and that should work fine. So the Excel toolbar, select tools, go down to macros. When you click on macros, you're going to see a drop-down menu with a choice of security, and select the choice of medium security. And then open that tool up and click Enable Macros. And again, if you encounter any difficulty, please just give us a call. Once you enable those macros, you're going to click in the area that says click here to activate the report. You can see it just beyond the screen here. And that will bring you to the screenshot that you see right there with the patient tally report production menu right up front. We have already loaded your patient tally report and outcome tally reports into this tool, and then we've also created two queries for you also, or reports, on the tool for the acute care hospitalization quality measure. And we're looking at slide 16. From that menu you just looked at on the previous slide, you're going to select the fourth option down, which says View Existing Spreadsheet Data. At the bottom of the page, you're going to select the tab that's labeled Case Mix Query 1. And that query provides a list of all of your hospitalized patients for your agency for that report period. At the bottom of the page, you'll also see a tab labeled Case Mix Query 2. And that provides a list of your non-hospitalized patients for your agency for that reporting period. And when I say list, I mean the actual patient name. And the purpose of this is really so you can select patient records for record review for your process of care investigation. From Case Mix Query 1, we would suggest selecting 30 patients to perform a record review utilizing the acute care hospitalization record review tool that we included in your acute care hospitalization planning packet. Once you've selected those 30 records, you're now ready to begin your process of care investigation. So let's look at the steps that are involved with this and why we actually need to do this step and why it's so important. And we're looking at slide 18 and summarizes the steps and the steps actually for the process of care investigation. And I'm going to discuss them in more detail shortly. Very important that you don't make assumptions for this step. We provided you with your tally report to select the patients and also the audit tool. So we're, again, trying to make it as easy as possible for you. You're actually going to review care episodes or those patient records, and we're going to show you how to summarize those findings, which will bring you to some decisions on what problems may be driving your acute care hospitalization rates. The process of care investigation, again, is an extremely important component of OBQI. Outcome measurement merely reports your agency's current performance on specific outcomes. You really need to systematically investigate the clinical actions that contributed to the outcomes. And as we discussed last week, OBQI is really a little different from our traditional quality improvement activities because you're starting with an actual outcome. And it's important then to look back to see what actually happened to cause that outcome, whether it be favorable or unfavorable. In other words, mere measurement of patient outcomes really doesn't improve the care. You really have to focus activity directed towards such improvement necessary to produce a change in the outcome, to identify what the problem is that's driving that outcome. Just some pitfalls to avoid, and those of you that have had OBQI training in the past will remember these. Trying to prevent premature closure or drawing immediate conclusions without fully investigating what is causing that outcome to be unfavorable or what is driving your acute care hospitalization rates. This is one of the most frequent and common pitfalls that's encountered with the process of care investigation. Jumping to conclusions, making assumptions, and knowing what actually is driving those rates. And we have some examples of that, as I said last week, of agencies that felt it was their patient falls that was driving their acute care hospitalization rate. So they developed a plan of action addressing fall and safety within the home. And what happened, although they did improve the safety for their patients, their acute care hospitalization rates didn't actually show any difference, didn't improve. And it was really because the plan of action was built around an area that may not be what was actually driving their acute care hospitalization rates. Also, we caution you not to only involve agency management. Especially with the process of care investigation, you want your clinical staff involved. You want their buy-in, and it's actually they're the critical element to this because they're actually the ones that are out there delivering the care. So they are key to this process. Looking at the data or blaming the data or analysis methods without further investigation, it's important to note that the focus of the investigation is the process of care, not on who is providing the care. So, you know, expressing displeasure with specific OASIS items, even though I know issues do exist, really doesn't address issues of care provision. You want to make sure that you're trying to look at the care delivery process, not just specifically OASIS issues. And again, that care delivery issue, really important to have a clear focus on the patient care element in developing and working through the process of care investigation and plan of action development. So let's look at some initial steps. We're moving to slide 21. What you're doing with the process of care investigation is identifying what should be done in providing care. And we'll see in the process, you're going to identify what should be done, which is what's incorporated into that acute care hospitalization record review tool that we provided to you. And then you're going to look at the actual records and determine what actually was done. This steps, again, help place the focus squarely on patient care delivery, and that allows for the process of care investigation to proceed appropriately. And I want to mention that acute care hospitalization clinical record review tool, you can feel free to customize that for your agency. You can either use it as is, or if there's some specific areas or issues that are specific to your patient population, please feel free to add them to that clinical record review tool or remove ones that you think are not appropriate. Okay, let's actually look at the tool, the review tool that you received in the packet. This is a screenshot of that tool. Again, there are other elements incorporated in this. Again, you receive this in the planning packet, and your staff are going to utilize this tool to review the clinical records, check for the presence of the care behaviors, and then in the right-hand column, they're going to mark if they find the care behavior present as they review the records. Some of the decisions that you have prior to doing the record review is to really determine the review format. We provided you with one, and again, you can customize that, as I mentioned. Determine who's going to conduct that review, if it's going to be your clinical staff, all of your staff, just a subset. Determine what's most reasonable for your agency to allow the review to proceed more quickly. And then determine the cases to be reviewed. And as I mentioned, if you use Case Mix Query 1 from that patient tally workbook, that'll direct you right to the patient records that you can pull to use for the record review. And then lastly, you want to determine the time frame for the review. How quickly do you want the charts reviewed? For example, do you want it in 3 days, a week, or some other interval? The decisions will really help allow the individual reviewer's assignment to be communicated more clearly. For example, letting the staff know, please review the 3 records that I placed on your desk this morning using the review criteria that we provided. And, for instance, we would like the review completed by Friday afternoon or within 2 weeks, just so everyone's clear on the time element that's involved. When your team or your clinical staff completes its review of the care provided, each team member will have a tally of the frequency with which the important care behaviors were utilized in providing care. And what you're going to do is take these individual tallies and aggregate them for the team to draw some conclusions about the problem that may be driving your acute care hospitalization rates. And then from this steps, the group's findings of problems can be summarized. And on the next slide, we're going to look at an example of a tool that allows for some summarization to occur. As you can see, this is formatted just as that clinical record review tool is. This is what you would use to tally this. And you can see, for instance, reviewer number 1 found that the first care behavior, which relates to assessment of prior hospitalizations at start of care, was present in all three records she reviewed. So this would be recorded as 3 for 3. And then looking at reviewer tool, they found this care behavior present in one of the two records reviewed. And you continue tallying the results for each reviewer in each care behavior. You can see that final column to the right is a grand total column. And that's going to give you an indication of the presence of these care behaviors in your patient records, which then again leads you to identify some problem areas to focus on. So if we look at the tally on slide 25, we can see that for this agency's record review, care behavior 2 was identified in 1 of 9 records, and also number 4, which was establishing a plan for deterioration in health status. So these two areas are opportunities for the agency to tackle and really build their plan of action around. And you can prioritize and identify which problem you would like to tackle first for a plan of action focus. From this point, when you identify what some problem areas may be, you're going to select the priority and put that into a problem statement. Now, just some quick review of the problem statements. This point is step is also very important because the rest of your plan of action is really developed along this from this problem statement. It should be specific and specifically describe aspects of care that demonstrate inadequate care that might be driving an unfavorable outcome. It needs to be specific and worded very concretely so that all the clinical staff understand what the problem is. We encourage you to make sure you try and address the issues that were within your agency's control. And we know even with acute care hospitalization, there are some things that may not be within your control. So try and focus in on things that are within your control. And again, that important element, looking at patient care delivery instead of documentation. And it should contain a sufficiently narrow focus to help a plan of action be manageable. And that's why we encourage you not to try and tackle 2 or 3 problems within one plan of action, but really pick the biggest one to give your biggest bang for your buck to focus in on initially. Remember that the plan of action is a work in progress, and as you move and improve on one problem area, you can always certainly move on to the next on your priority list as you move forward. So at this point, we're following these steps and using the tools I reviewed. You're going to have completed your process of care investigation. That will lead you to identify your problem area for plan of action focus. And now we're going to switch gears a bit so that Chris can review with you in more detail the acute care hospitalization improvement matrix. She's going to talk about its application to the next steps for your plan of action development, looking at selection of evidence-based strategies and actions to really address the problem you identified. And so, Chris, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Thank you, Sarah. So as Sarah said, I'm going to be going through the change binder and how the change binder relates to the OBQI process and development of the plan of action. When we talk about the change binder, we're talking about what the tools and the matrix together that were given to you on a CD, that were sent to you on a CD in the planning packet. So if you want to go to the next slide. Here's just the table of contents for the change framework. And we've already talked about the challenge and the mission of the framework. One thing to know is on the welcome page, this change binder is intended as a resource for quality improvement professionals such as yourself. It's not intended as a prescriptive, ready-to-use program of care, but as a resource for guiding your quality improvement work. As you know, the OBQI process was designed for each agency to identify and address its specific issues, and what might be the best approach for one agency may not be the best approach for another agency. Here are the set of definitions that you saw in part one. They are also included in your change binder, and you can read this and review and reference back to it once you start investigating. This is the big picture of the improvement matrix. It can be used by reading across the columns or reading down for the change of the stages of care. The columns in the matrix reflect categories called areas of improvement, which are based on the chronic care model. The five areas for improvement are promoting patient self-management, implementing evidence-based practices and guidelines, using strategies and technology to promote effectiveness and efficiency, improving care delivery systems and mobilizing community resources, and creating a culture of quality. You might want to, if you have your planning packet with you, you might want to pull this out and look at it as we go through this. The rows in the matrix present information according to the patient's stage of care, from referral or pre-admission status to the first week of care, during the entire episode of care, and then when the patient presents at the emergency department. The individual blocks on the matrix contain high-level strategies for change. The strategies marked with an asterisk are considered high-leverage areas identified by experts and supported in the literature. For each area for improvement, the strategies are further broken down into specific ideas for actions that can be tested and implemented at the agency level. You can go to the next slide. Now we will go into more detail for each areas for improvement. The next slide. Chronic conditions are now the leading cause of illness, disability, and death in the United States and affect the majority of elderly home care patients. One key element of improving chronic illness care is promoting effective patient self-management. This means involving patients as active, informed participants in their care and empowering them to make choices. Self-management involves teaching problem-solving skills and emphasizes self-efficacy and confidence to carry out behavior necessary to reach goals. It's important to assess the patient's readiness to also take on self-care activities. Evidence from controlled trials has found that programs teaching self-management skills are more effective than traditional information-only patient education in improving clinical outcomes and reducing hospitalization. Home care nurses are in a unique position to motivate and educate patients in their own homes and then help them adjust their daily routines to avoid exacerbations. The toolkit has specific actions and tools that can be used to help equip nurses to more effectively promote patient self-management. The next slide. National experts agree that to improve quality of care, the best care results from the consciousness, explicit, and judicious use of current best evidence and knowledge of patient values by well-trained, experienced clinicians. So it takes into account both the importance of the evidence, but also the importance of the knowledge, skills, and experience of the clinician. However, the two IOM reports, To Air is Human and Crossing the Quality Chasm, have highlighted the gap existing between quality of care that could and should be received versus what is generally delivered. There is a strong foundation of evidence-based guidelines for many chronic illnesses that have been developed by national bodies based on the best available science. Research demonstrates that effective implementation of interventions can significantly improve clinical outcomes and lower the risk of hospitalizations. The tools and resources that are identified in the toolkit are not meant to be all-inclusive. They are the best examples that could be found at the time that we were developing the change framework. An ongoing challenge will be to adapt the growing body of evidence-based guidelines and tools for home care. The next slide. Organizational systems can facilitate and sustain evidence-based practice and practice improvements. This area for improvement is related to the concept that quality should not be solely solely the responsibility of individual clinicians. Organizational systems need to support clinicians doing the right thing every time. Systems to support effective care range from simply changing forms, using prompts or call reminders, all the way to using a computerized tracking system or electronic reminders and real-time monitoring through new technology. Such systems can provide high-quality, cost-effective care and are being used to supplement and enhance face-to-face care. But remember, systems don't have to mean technology. Even low-tech agencies can implement effective systems. There is an acknowledgement that whether the outcomes, whether good or bad, are not solely the responsibility of the individual clinician. Now we're on slide 35. Many factors that contribute to avoidable hospitalizations come from outside of the home health agency. Contributors to hospitalizations include lack of suboptimal assessment of the patient's readiness for discharge, fragmented or incomplete discharge planning, poor communication, and insufficient transfer of information across the health systems. Research has been demonstrating that significant reductions in hospitalization can be achieved by implementing delivery system strategies and interventions designed to rectify these issues. The most effective strategies include the collaborative process from hospital to home with improved communication between all hospital discharge case managers, physicians and RN interactions, and the use of advanced practice nurses. We go into the next slide. Vigorous leadership and incentive systems can be critical influences for successful change. Quality improvement is a complex process that is most successful in organizations that are ready for change with strong leaders who support quality goals. Creating a culture of quality is incorporating quality performance objectives in an organization's strategic objectives. Gaining commitment from senior leaders at each stage of the quality improvement process and engaging staff at the bottom up. A culture of CQI is one that encourages and rewards the pursuit and achievement of shared quality aims. Now we're going to go into some specifics of the matrix. This slide, I'm on slide 37, is an excerpt of the detailed improvement matrix in the area for improvement implementing of evidence-based practice and guidelines. You see the high-level strategy from the improvement matrix with the specific action and tools and resources that apply to that action. You see that this is strategy number B2. You can see the high strategy is use evidence-based risk assessment tools to identify high-risk patients and incorporate risk factors into individualized patient care plans. Then the action would be, in the next column, identify, adapt, or adopt an evidence-based assessment tool to identify patients who are at risk of hospitalization and train clinicians in its use. And then in the third column, you find the tools that will be found in the toolkit with associated numbers. And the numbers correspond to the index in the toolkit where you'll find more information, and most of the tools, you'll find a copy of them in your toolkit, so you'll be able to pull them out and adapt them to your agency. The next slide is a page from the Index of Tools and Resources. Many of the actions have related tools and resources, which have been assigned a number, as I said before. The number in the index relate back to the tools and the resources identified in the improvement matrix for each area of improvement. The tools and the resources that are provided in the separate toolkit will have a triangle next to them. The added column on the far right, under topic, allows you to find the tools and resources for a specific diagnosis or topics that cross areas for improvement. One of the recommendations from the pilot was to identify specific tools for specific diseases. So we tried to do that by having the topic set column. The next slide shows a summary of the evidence cited for each area of improvement, followed by additional references for all the sections in the change binder. The following are the references cited following are the references cited are separated for each area of improvement, with a general reference list for hospitalizations following. The assessment of the strength of the evidence was based on the following criteria. So criteria strength A is a recommendation is supported by scientific evidence from properly designed and implemented controlled trials. Strength B is the recommendation is supported by scientific evidence from properly designed and implemented research studies. Strength C is the recommendation is supported by synthesis of literature compiled by expert researchers and clinicians. And strength of evidence D is recommendation is supported by expert opinion. And that really gives the evidence-based measurement for all of the tools included. The summary table is then followed by other references for each section in the change binder. The improvement matrix, along with the toolkit, and comprises the whole change binder, as I said before, and provides an excellent system to make transformational changes within your agency. The strategies, tools, and resources are not intended to be comprehensive. Problems and issues identified for each agency will be different. The OBQI process is a performance improvement methodology designed specifically for home care. The strategies and actions detailed in the change binder complement this process. Each agency should use the OBQI process along with the other tools, as Sarah explained before, to identify, prioritize, and focus the changes in care practices or agency processes and systems. We're on slide 41 now. By completing the process of care investigation, your OBQI team will be able to develop a problem or strength statement. Specific actions identified from the areas for improvement in the improvement matrix will provide a starting point for identifying best practices. All the actions from the areas of improvement for promoting patient self-management and implementing evidence-based practices and guidelines are related to clinical practice. The best practices in the plan of action focus on specific clinical actions. They use concrete wording to identify exactly what you want the clinician to do, when to do it, and how to do it. It focuses on patient care delivery and addresses an issue within the agency's control. The next slide. The plan of action is an implementation planning guide for the application of the actions from the improvement matrix. The investigation and identification of care issues may indicate the need to change not only clinical care behaviors, but agency processes and systems. The strategies and actions for systems and technology, improving care delivery systems, and creating a culture of quality include organizational, process, and system changes that may be appropriate for intervention activities. To ensure clinical best practices and are consistently implemented. If you want to look at the plan of action that was sent to you via email, or it's also posted on our website, you can see that the target outcome to address was acute care hospitalization, but you can see the identified problem or strength. And they're identifying that clinicians are not identifying patients at high risk for hospitalization or emergent care and addressing those risk factors to prevent deterioration in health status requiring hospitalization. And then you can see the list of care behaviors that have been selected as best practice. And there's four of them listed here. I won't go through all four of them, but I just wanted to give you an idea of how the plan of action is beginning to be set up. Next, we'll review the intervention actions. In the agency's plan of action, the term intervention means what is to be done in the agency by agency staff to implement the specified best practices. It's important to clearly distinguish between the best practices and the intervention actions for your plan of action. Remember that the best practices are precise aspects of care delivery, that your clinical staff will be expected to perform, and the intervention actions indicate how you will make your clinicians aware of and responsible for these practices. The intervention actions are necessary to move the best practices off the paper and into the clinician practice in your agency. The intervention actions allow you to carefully plan the changes necessary in care delivery. They also assist you to provide detailed instructions on how to implement the precise changes in behavior that you want to occur. And you can, again, see in the plan of action, there are very specific intervention actions that you can see. One is the emergent contact plan protocols will be reviewed and updated to include signs and symptoms, actions to take, and whom to contact. And you can see, right, it goes through the time frame it will be implemented, the responsible person, as well as how they will know that the intervention action has been completed. The next slide. Now we're on slide 44. An effective action plan is likely to incorporate actions from a combination of strategies. These strategy combinations are strategies that can be combined from two or more areas of improvement with the columns on the improvement matrix to begin addressing a common problem. The most common strategy combinations that were seen in the pilot were related to identifying patients at high risk and implementing actions to address the risk, strategies within disease management, and transitions from hospital to home care. Agencies that chose disease management strategy combinations had identified patients with specific diagnoses that had a high rate of rehospitalization. Agencies that chose transitions between hospital and home care, they identified problems with inappropriate discharges or problems with patient transfers from the hospital to other and from other referral sources. Here's an example of a strategy combination related to identifying patients at risk of hospitalization and implementing actions to address the risk factors. This is considered a high leverage area. And you can see that from the number of the strategy, you can see that it goes over several areas for improvement. The sample plan of action that was provided as a handout uses this combination strategy in its development. And you can see that because after the care behavior, item A, you'll see strategy A2 and then action A2.2. So you can look at the match the improvement matrix to the best behaviors. Go to the next slide. Most changes should be tested on a small scale before implemented agency-wide. This is especially important if the change being considered is costly or complex and involves a large number of patients or staff. PDSA is a trial and learning method to test changes quickly to see how they work. These small tests of change can be integrated into the OBQI process as depicted in this figure. And as it says on the slide, PDSA stands for Plan, Do, Study, Act. The completion of each PDSA cycle can lead directly into the start of the next cycle. A team learns from the test and uses the next knowledge to plan the next test. The team continues linking PDSA cycles, refining the change until it is ready for broader implementation. You plan a change, then do it on a small scale, and then study results and act to refine the change. In the pilot, many of the agencies used the high-risk assessment tool as an initial tool to begin evaluating their patients at high risk. Then, during the pilot, or within a month or so, they were looking at the case mix analysis tool and found that some of the characteristics for patients within their agency. So they would revise the high-risk assessment tool and relate it more specifically to their patient population. continue to follow the monitoring schedule as outlined in your original plan of action, making certain that results are communicated to the entire agency staff and appropriate actions are taken. On to the next slide. Through the intervention actions, clinical staff should be informed of the expected changes in care practices and be educated on how the changes should occur in the routine provision of patient care so they understand what is expected of them. The individuals designated in the action plan as responsible for specific intervention activities actually carry out those activities. All specified activities occur at designated times. In the pilot, agencies were encouraged to do small tests of change prior to full-scale implementation, as we saw on the prior slide. The agencies seemed to grasp the concept and put it in action as they learned trial by error. They didn't really understand what they were doing initially, but then as the pilot progressed, they were able to understand and follow through. The plan of action once developed is a dynamic tool, not set in stone. Monitoring results may indicate the OBQI team needs to modify the plan of action. Measurement helps you to monitor and track your progress and to evaluate the changes in the changes in the agency have occurred. Outcome measures will evaluate whether the changes have had an impact on the hospitalization rate. Process measures evaluate whether the best practices, strategies, and actions are being followed. The monitoring activities relate to completion of the intervention actions and ensuring that the best practices are consistently incorporated into patient care. If the monitoring results indicate the best practices have been implemented by the clinicians, but the outcome rate has not improved, the plan of action may need to be revised and a new process of care investigation completed. Some tips for internal monitoring that you can use as you track your progress through progress with the acute care hospitalization initiative. First, you need to monitor your measures over time. Don't monitor too often, but often enough to be assured that the changes you are making are leading to improvement. Usually you monitor more frequently at the beginning and then you less frequently as you're finding that the best practices are being incorporated. You want to assign the responsibility of data collection to somebody. It's important that you want to make sure that this activity is not neglected. You should establish a schedule and process for your data collection activities. Again, these steps will help to follow through on the monitoring process, and we suggest that you at least monitor at least monthly. You may want to consider real-time data collection at the time of discharge or transfer. For example, if your average number of discharges is 60 per month, you might want to review every other case. If at all possible, try to integrate your data collection into your ongoing work and record review process. Try to do several chart reviews per week rather than waiting to do all 30 at once or all 10 at once at the end of the month. So, we've reviewed the patient tally workbook and the case mix analysis tool, how to perform a process of care investigation, and the relationship between the change binder and the OBQI process. The next steps that we have to talk about is to inform your agency, go back and tell your agency, your clinicians, about the acute care hospitalization initiative, that's what you're going to be focusing on for the next year or so, or for the next 3 years, actually. If your agency doesn't have an OBQI team, ask for volunteers to create one within your agency and begin performing the process of care investigation using the acute care hospitalization clinical record review form included in your planning packet. Or, as Sarah said, you can adapt it, revise it, or create your own. We encourage all of you to call us with questions. The next slide. We've planned the November regional workshops to assist agencies in developing their plans of actions by using the improvement matrix and toolkit. Each agency who attends needs to have conducted the process of care investigation prior to attending. We will be discussing the problems and strengths that have been identified by the agencies and assisting in the plan of action development at the workshop. The goal is for each agency who attends the workshop that they will leave with a plan of action outline to go back to their agency and finalize with their OBQI team. Once the plan of action has been developed, we will assist agencies to write the process measures for internal monitoring. We'll also be providing internal monitoring review tools for agencies to use at the workshop. The workshop afternoon breakout sessions will be the specific focus for the plan of action development. We've listened to the long-term care and special needs agencies, and they have their own group, so we will be splitting them out. And they will have an opportunity to collaborate on issues specific to their patient populations. I'm on slide 53 now. As I stated before, the goals for the workshop are to leave the workshop with a plan of action constructed or outlined, and then go back to return to your agency to consult with your clinical staff or OBQI team for your tool selection from the toolkit. And we would ask that you submit your final plan of action to us no later than the end of December for review and comment. And please feel free to send it to us sooner if you have it completed. Here's a list of places and actions that you will find helpful during the next few weeks. I encourage everyone to access medquick.org, the website that is for quality improvement. Use the change binder and the library of resources and tools. Discuss issues among yourselves as well as stay in contact with myself, Sarah, and Susan Hollander of the Home Health Project team. And here is our contact information. Susan, would you like to open the lines for questions at this time?
Thank you. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question, and we'll pause a moment to assemble the roster. We'll take our first question from Deborah Hilliard in Fishkill Home Care.
Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you, Sarah?
Good.
I have a question. Where's this change finder? Is that on those CD-ROMs that you gave us? I guess that's what I'm looking for. You mentioned change finder, and I'm trying to find that in this packet.
Okay. There's two CD-ROMs in your packet.
Mm-hmm.
One CD-ROM has your agency name and your Medicare provider number. That CD-ROM contains your patient tally workbook and the case mix analysis tool.
Okay.
The second CD-ROM says acute care hospitalization improvement matrix, and that has the change binder that Chris was just talking about, and it also has the tools and resources in a separate file on it. So if you have some tools identified, you can go right there and look at the tools and see what they're like, modify them, whatever works for you.
Okay.
It's also posted, Deborah, to that MedQuick website that Chris just referenced.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You have your own individual copy right there, and you also have a hard copy of the improvement matrix in that packet.
Okay, I have another question. At one point, it was mentioned that you were thinking of trying to work with the long-term home health care programs in this whole process.
Uh-huh.
Are you going to have separate workshops with the long-term home care programs by any chance?
The afternoon part of those workshops, from like 1 o'clock on to 4 o'clock, we're going to break out the agencies into various agency types, and we're going to bring the special needs and long-term care agencies together in one room to talk about the issues that impact your population, We're hoping that you'll share amongst yourself. You may have a particular problem or issue that's been identified that somebody else in the room has already tackled. But our goal through that afternoon session with you as a group is to help you identify some strategies that might work for your agency, your specific population. If there's issues that aren't addressed in that improvement matrix, we're going to try our best to get you the tools that you need for your patient population.
Okay. And I assume we can register on the web?
Yes, you can go right to our website, www.ipro.org.
Okay.
Look for upcoming events section.
Okay.
We need to limit the number of people attending the workshops only because of the size of the sites that we're going to be at and the fact that it's the three of us that are going to try and facilitate. And so we can't take more than two people per agency, and we need each agency to just register for one of the workshops.
Okay. Okay, that's fine. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Deborah.
And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, please press star 1 at this time. We'll now move on to Nancy Ziegler with Putnam Hospital Home Care.
Hi, Nancy.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay. Our home care agency has a CHA and a long term.
Mm-hmm.
Could we be planning on doing two different, like, separate audits or combining them?
Actually, that's an excellent idea, Nancy. You may, instead of 30 records total, what I would suggest, if you you should be able, I believe, by name on your patient tally workbook and that CAKES mix query 1 from that hospitalized list of patients, identify who your long-term care patients are, and you may want to select 15 long-term cares and then 15 CHA patients, just so you can see what different issues fall out.
Okay, so it wouldn't depend on our census of each? Like, we have anywhere from 90 to 100 CHA and 40 to 50 long-term?
Not really, because you're trying to see what issues are specific to those two populations. Certainly, if you wanted to do more of one than the other, you could. But it would probably be an excellent idea for you, and that's an excellent question, to look at both populations. You would only be doing one plan of action, but, you know, look at both of those records.
Okay, thanks.
Sure.
We'll now hear from Cheryl Hilton with St. Camilla's Home Care.
Hi, Cheryl.
Cheryl. Yes. Is this for Cheryl?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. We are wondering, we're a smaller agency, if we could do the review, the chart audit by percent, not 30 charts.
You could probably, that's something maybe, Cheryl, you could talk to Chris or Susan and I about, just so we could get an idea of how many patients you have to help you select. You know, you could do 15 or 20 records if you're very small. You certainly want a big enough sample size. If you want to give one of us a call, let's talk that through for you and see what's reasonable for you and what we would suggest.
Thank you so much.
Sure.
And as a final reminder, if you would like to ask a question today, please press star 1 at this time. We'll take our next question from Kathy Jablonski with the Visiting Nurse Service and Hospice of Suffolk.
Hello?
Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi. I'm just looking at the dates for the regional workshops, and unfortunately I'm away that week. You're not having anything on Long Island, I'm assuming?
The Long Island one is scheduled for the 30th of November.
Oh, okay. I don't see it on the web, but I just see the Syracuse, Rochester, and Albany one.
November 30th is New York City, Kathy.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me see. Long Island. I see screen training.
Look for the...
Oh, it's in New York City on the 30th.
Right, and then December 1st, look for that one. That should be Long
Island. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't go far enough down.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
Okay.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time. Ms. Butterfield, I would like to turn the conference back over to you for any additional or closing remarks.
Okay. Thanks, Susan. Again, as Chris mentioned before, if you have any questions, the purpose of us trying to do these Part 1 and Part 2 conference calls and the workshops is to try and not overwhelm you with all of this for acute care hospitalization. We know that the improvement matrix, the terminology is a little different than what everybody's used to. So we're hoping that these two series of conference calls gave you some more clarity with regards to the improvement matrix, the application to OBQI, how to use those reports that we sent to you, and how to do a simple process of care investigation, which is really just looking at your medical records to see what problem might be driving your acute care hospitalization rates. But please, if you have any questions, please call one of the three of us, because we'll be glad to go over in a little more detail or over the information we provided today. As we just talked about those workshops, you can register for those on the IPRO website. We do definitely need, so we can make the most efficient use of everyone's time during those workshops, because we know it's difficult for you to get out of those agencies for a day. We really like you to come with your process of care investigation done, and also having looked at that improvement matrix to see which of those strategies appeal to you or might be viable to tackle based upon the problem you identified in your process of care investigation. So we really would like you to come. If you need any help in the process of care investigation process, again, call us. I would encourage you, if you would please, to fill out those evaluations that we forwarded you in the email. We'd like your feedback on today's session. We definitely do use that, as some of you made comments last time. We tried to incorporate those improvements in today's presentation. And if you don't have the evaluation, again, you can go to our website, that same URL address I gave earlier, and download the evaluation form. You can either email it or fax it to us, whatever is easiest. We're going to be posting today's audio to the website. And as I mentioned, last week's is already up there if you feel that you'd like to go and review that. Feel free to contact one of the three of us with any questions. And we greatly appreciate your participation on today's call and for spending the afternoon with us. We also greatly appreciate all your cooperation and the collaboration with us during the past 3 years, and we're going to be looking forward definitely to our work on the Acute Care Hospitalization Initiative these next 3 years. So thank you, Nuss, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks, Susan.
Thank you. And that does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.